The next topic, restoration satire. Introduction. The restoration is known for the great efflorescence of the spirit of satire, which was the reign supreme for decades thereafter. In hands of Dryden, satire became for the first time a polished and highly effective weapon of offense, correction, and even self-expression. The spirit of satire did not manifest itself only in the satirical works of Dryden, Butler, Oldham, Rochester, Curtin, and others, but also in Restoration drama, tragedy, as well as comedy. Generally, tragedy does not lend itself to satire, but in odd ways, when it is preserved, we have a very easily recognizable representation of Shaftesbury in the characters of Senator Antonio as regards Restoration comedy. It is nothing if not satirical. Its obvious intention is to portray and comment upon contemporary manner or to satirize. And to satirize the deviation from the accepted code of gentleness. Thus, we have to agree with Kazamian when the maintains, in inverted comma, the Restoration theatre is in a sense and in its most brilliant aspect one great satire, inverted comma, closed. The satiric spirit rife in the Restoration period influenced even such a poet as Milton. Epic lends itself to satire even less than tragedy, but in Milton's Paradise Lost, there are passages with patently satirical intent, such as, for instance, the one describing the nocturnal activities of the son of Belial, who evidently are no other than the voluptuous and riotous courtier and their train bearers. Reason for the growth of the satirical spirit. As to why the satirical spirit grew enormously in the Restoration period is a provocative question. Some reason accounting for this growth can, however, be easily deduced. Let us briefly consider them. All satire, whether constructive or just destructive, arise from sense and dissatisfaction, anger or disgust at the departure of the real form and the idea. The following sort of thing from their well-accepted standard of excellence. Now, with the restoration of Charles II to the throne of England, conventional, orthodox, and puritanic morality and religiosity were dismissed as a standard of excellence, and their place was given to fashion and gentle taste. Once these new standards were fixed and become very easy to detect any departure from them, which necessitated chastisement, says Kazamian in inverted comma, judging and condemning as a result grew more simple and more facile operation. Inverted comma closed. Moreover, with the restoration came a greater freedom of expression, and even the most securilous abuse or salacious condemnation in print came to be tolerated, particularly so if it was directed against the Puritan fanatic or the political enemies or a monarchy and the king. Indeed, in the Restoration age appeared numerous satire on Puritan and their creed. Butler and Hudibras is the most well known of them. Then the political strife which developed in the Restoration age was also responsible for giving rise to numerous satire. It was in the age that there came to be for the first time a clear polarization of English political opinion, in bracket, between the Whig and Tories, in bracket close. Dryden, Absalom and Achitophel and the Medal are basically political satire. Finally, the new classical tendency, which was in ascendant in this period, also encouraged the growth of the satiric spirit. In an increased interest in the study of classical writer, mostly the Roman writer of antiquity, prompted the Restoration men of letters to take up the genre of satire as a vehicle of personal expression and a public improvement. The great Roman satirist Persius, Juvenal, and Horace were studied, appreciated, admired, and imitated. However, it was the two first named who exert a tangible influence on the Restoration satirists. Juvenal, with the gift of the novel invective, was the most favored. Oldham thought he was assiduously copying Juvenal in his own satires and was called later the English Juvenal. Horace came to exert an appreciable influence only in 18th century. His gift of comedy and his subtle indirection of technique had an impress on the masterful satire of Pope and his contemporaries. But it was not only the study of Roman classic which encouraged satire in the Restoration age. There is also be reckoned the prevalence of satire in contemporary France. In that age, most of the fashion in dress, manner, and the literature were imported from France. At that time, the spirit of satire was aborted in France. Boileau and the new classical French poet, critic, and satirist was the most brilliant practitioner of this genre. Most of the English satirists of the last years of 17th and the early years of 18th century exhibit in their work a more considerable influence of Boileau than the any Roman satirist. Samuel Butler, 1612 to 1880. The Restoration period opened with a work very much exhibitive of its spirit, Hudibras, Samuel Butler, which appeared in three parts in 1663 and 64 and 1678, each part consisting of three cantos. It was a powerful but low satire on the Puritan who had been subdued with the restoration of Charles II to the throne of England in 1660. Butler was not a courtier, nor was he a member of the nobility, and the story goes that he died in poverty. Nevertheless, in his attack on the Puritan, he outdid many a courtier. Hudibras enjoyed excessive popularity with the courtier and the king himself, who used to keep a copy of it always in his pocket. The poem is formless, crabbed in versification and gross at numerous places, but none can deny the force of punches Butler leveled against the Puritans. In its form, Hudibras is a burlesque of high romance, representing peasant knight out of defend virtue. That way it resembles Cervantes' Don Quixote, Donquixote, which is also a burlesque of the same kind. But it has also element reminiscent of the French poet Sacron, who burlesqued the epic of Virgil. The name Hudibras is taken from Spenser's Faerie Queen. Butler Hudibras is a Presbyterian who is hypocritical, covetous, cowardly, and full of pedantic learning. Rolfo and independent in his square, the hero rides a rickety horse and it's equipped with rusty arm in the company of his squire. He comes out in search of some righteous adventure. However, his squire and he go all the time quarreling about minute point of religious doctrine, and their quarrel consume a sizable proportion of the poem. Hudibras is described to be In logic, a great critic, profoundly skilled in analytic, he would distinguish and divide. He could distinguish and divide a hair twixt south and southwest side, on either which he would dispute, confute, change hand, still confute. Of course, Hudibras's logic chopping is satirical of the Puritanic casuistry. The first adventure of Hudibras and the Ralpho is their fight with a group of beer batters. The Puritans were against all country sports, including beer batting, not because Macaulay puts its beer batting gave pain to the beer, but because it gave pleasure to the spectator. In the beginning, it too adventure are successful, but then they are vanquished and put it stock as a couple of miscreant. Even when they are in stock, they continue mutual polemics. On part second, Hudibras is represented as having fallen in love with the poverty of a widow, and incidentally the widow herself too. The widow asks him to submit to whipping or winning her favor. Hudibras urges Ralpho as serve or his substitute. A loud quarrel ensues between the two. They consult an astrologer who is discovered to be a humbug. Is beaten up and left by the two adventurers for dead. Hudibras parts company with Ralpho so that the latter may be apprehended at the murderer. In part third, Hudibras is represented as going alone to the widow for pleading for her favor. On hearing a knock, he'd hide under a bed, thinking that it is the ghost of the astrologer who has come to wreak vengeance. His cowardice is discovered and his soundly belabored. After escaping ignominiously, he consults a lawyer who advises him to write love letter to his beloved. The rest of this part does not advance the story of at all. It is probable that Butler desired to round off the work with a fourth part. Basically, this satire is intended against the Puritan, their hypocrisy, pedantry, covetousness, casuistry, fanaticism, and querulousness. Of course, Hudibras and Ralpho are representative of the Puritans. The satire, however, here and there become broader in purpose and significance. Butler is anti-intellectual, anti-science, and even anti-poetry. He was fighting a losing battle with his age, and to quote Jordan Sherburne, his lot was to go down fighting scurrilously. The unit of the poem is the octosyllabic couplet, but Butler's couplets are most rehearsed and unmusical. He is very fond of curious double rhyme, which aid a touch of the doggerel. Among the rest of Butler's work may be mentioned in the satire on the Royal Society and the Elephant in the Moon, both of which show his disapproval of the new learning. John Dryden, 1631-1700. Dryden is the most distinguished for the Restoration satirist. It was he who established classical satire in England. Breaking away from the tradition of Donne, Hall, Cleveland, Butler, and other. His contemporary Butler in his form and method falls more in line with the native tradition than the neoclassical tradition initiated by Dryden. Butler's wrecked and reject versification puts on in mind of Langland, Skelton, and Donne, rather than the contemporary neoclassical French school represented chiefly by Boileau, who influenced a large number of English poets in the Restoration and the early 18th century. Before Dryden, satire enjoyed a quite low level Achitophel brought in near and dignity of the epic. The satirist was a very respectable member. Of the ancient Roman society, and the satirist in the post-Restoration age become a very reputable, if not a very respectable, member of English society. Dryden found himself in his proper element when, the age of 50, he came to the writing of his most outstanding satire entitled Absalom and Achitophel. This work is of the nature of a political satire and was most probably written at the suggestion of the king himself to embody the royal and the Troy point of view regarding the exclusive crisis. Charles II had no legitimate issue, and his throne was to come to his brother, the Duke of York, who was sought by the Whig to be excluded from succession for his alleged Roman Catholic sympathies. Charles II, illegitimate son of the Duke of Monmouth, was favored by the Whigs for succession. Monmouth was thought to have been incited by the Wellesley Earl and Shaftesbury to take up the arm against the king. Shaftesbury was put in the Tower. A week before the date of his trial came Dryden, Absalom and Achitophel, which was obviously meant to secure Shaftesbury in indictment. Therein Dryden represented Shaftesbury was a wicked seducer of the innocent Duke of Monmouth, who was tempted by Shaftesbury as Adam had been seduced by Satan. Dryden also took occasion in the poem to lash at some other Whig leaders. The main interest of the poem lies in the satiric portrait, which in their execution shows the hand of a master. There was also a sequence to this poem, composed mainly by Noam, containing some 200 lines by Dryden, in which he lashed Elkanah, Settle and Thomas Sedwell as Doz and Oz respectively. The middle again was political and topical in nature and genesis. In spite of Absalom and Achitophel and the virulent propaganda by other Tories, Shaftesbury could not be indicted at the trial and was released from the Tower. The Whig were jubilant and struck a medal bearing the effigy of their hero to commemorate the triumphant occasion. Dryden felt piqued and let out a virulent attack on Shaftesbury and his followers in the middle. MacFlecknoe is the only satire written by Dryden in which he attacks a personal enemy. He is Thomas Sedwell, who is satirized by Dryden as the occupant of the throne of dullness in succession of his father, Flecknoe, a very dull Irish poet. The poem abounds in passages of brilliant wit and sarcasm and strokes to mock heroic characterization, all masterfully calculated to sacrifice the allegedly dull poet and playwright. Minor satirist. Among the other satirists of the age may be mentioned Aldham, Rochester and Cotton, then Aldham, 1653-683, the young friend of Dryden, looked for inspiration and guidance wholly to the ancient Roman writer, particularly Juvenal. He has often been called the English Juvenal, but not for very good reason. The erroneously believed that in his harsh diction and deliberately rushed verification, he was following Juvenal. Satire is too generalized and avoid personalities altogether. His most important and ambitious work is his satire upon the gesture and the inspiration of his satire is mostly classical, and as in the satire of Juvenal, there is not much humor to relieve, as Kazamian put it, the eloquence of irony of the execration. Rochester is known for his poem On Nothing, which was praised by Dr. Johnson. His Satire Against Mankind, (1675), is a cynical but light-hearted denunciation of all humanity. Rochester has plenty of wit, but most of his works, other than the work named above, are full of unprintable grossness. Charles Cotton is known for Scornides or Virgil Travesty, 1663, in which he burlesqued Virgil's heroic poetry after the example of the French poet Sacron. The poem owed some of its popularity to the antiquity heroic cult initiated by Butler Hudibras. The topic, Restoration Satire, over.